The Ryan Tuberty Show on RTE Radio 1. Sponsored by Sky Broadband. Get the power to do more with Sky's best ever Wi-Fi.
Coming up to 9:29 this Thursday morning. It's very good to have you with us. The text number is 51551. It is, of course, April Fool's Day, but every day is April Fool's Day for a lot of people online, let's be honest about it, which is why I want to speak to Mariana Spring. Good morning, Mariana. Nice to talk to you.
Good morning.
You're what's called a disinformation reporter with the BBC. So today is, for us, a day where we kind of laugh and highlight the fact that people are trying to fool each other. But that's pretty much your job every day.
It is my job every day. What I do is investigate the impact of online conspiracy theories and disinformation that's being shared on social media. And to be honest, the harm that it's caused over the course of the past year, from people falling ill or even dying, losing their lives, relationships being ruined, and violence being inspired, riots, and people might have seen what happened at Capitol Hill in the US. A lot of that was fueled by online conspiracy theories. So while there are the weird and more wacky conspiracies that I come across on a daily basis,
yes,
I spend a lot of time reporting on the real world consequences that these have.
Yeah, that's what's intriguing here, I think, because we all know now at this stage about 5G and about anti-vaccine and all that kind of thing. And this isn't an interview that's meant to be kind of beating people over the head or saying, you know, some people are fools and some people are knaves or whatever it might be. This is more about the impact of all of this. But we'll get to that in a moment, if you don't mind, Mariana. There was a time, when certainly when I was younger, where conspiracy theories meant Lord Lucan's alive, JFK was assassinated by Cubans or the mafia, and Neil Armstrong didn't walk on the moon. And there were about, you know, maybe five conspiracy theories. What happened? When did the tipping point, as Gladwell would say, arrive that changed everything?
I think you're right. A lot of conspiracy theories that we think of online, we tend to see as pretty harmless, stuff about 9/11 or JFK's being killed and things like that. But actually, the problem is, particularly when a conspiracy movement or an online movement starts to try and explain things not that have already happened, but actually are happening in the present. And when that occurs, we start to see real world harm coming about, because people are trying to explain things that are acutely happening in their lives, for instance, the pandemic. And as a consequence, they believe false claims. There was a man I interviewed called Brian who thought the pandemic wasn't real, that COVID was a hoax, that it might have been caused by 5G. He's based in America, and he was seeing all of that stuff on Facebook. And as a consequence of becoming embroiled in this online disinformation and these conspiracy networks, he didn't follow health guidance. He and his wife both fell ill. He didn't seek help when they fell ill because he thought COVID wasn't really serious. And very sadly, they both ended up in intensive care in the US, and Brian's wife went on to lose her life as a consequence. So you can see how conspiracies that spread now and try and explain what's going on around us in the present are very harmful, in a way that those kind of quirkier conspiracies that we all find quite fascinating aren't quite so harmful.
Right. So there was a charm to the previous ones I mentioned, and the which is completely at odds with the ones now you're talking about, which are dangerous and can be not only life-threatening but fatal, as you've just described through your example. I certainly get anecdotally from talking to people I know, whether it's mostly colleagues now because I can't really talk to a whole heap of other people, but you hear stories, Mariana, from people talking about how somebody within their family has found the rabbit hole online. Somebody perfectly normal person, just a good person, maybe in lockdown, maybe an awful lot of time on their hands, and this strange, shiny trinket of disinformation has lured them, as I say, down the rabbit hole, and they're gone. They've gone. They've become untethered from reality.
Absolutely. I hear about this all the time.
Yeah.
Every day I get emails, I get messages from people whose auntie or parent or son or cousin have fallen down that conspiracy rabbit hole online. And as a consequence, it's straining their relationships. And it's really, really sad to hear about. And it's becoming certainly more of a problem. I often joke that I'm a bit like the BBC's conspiracy agony aunt, because I'm overwhelmed with messages from people that I I really try to respond to. And I think what it often reveals to me is a lot about why people believe online conspiracy theories. And you're right to say people have been sitting at home. They haven't had much to do. They've been feeling really worried, as we all have, because this pandemic was very, you know, totally unprecedented. And they're trying to make sense of what's going on around them. But I think there's this misconception that people that believe disinformation online or conspiracies are gullible, that they don't analyse what they're seeing online. And in many ways, I often find it's actually people who are very, very cynical who are susceptible to this stuff because they don't trust anything. And when you don't trust anything, it's very difficult to convince someone that what they're seeing online isn't true because they just don't trust, sometimes for legitimate reasons, the institutions or authorities that are trying to give them good information.
Right. And I think that's a very important point that you're making as well, is that, you know, people like me in the mainstream media, so-called, could sit in righteous judgment about conspiracy theorists, especially there's so many of them now. But actually, a lot of them, as I say, are very good people who are just peeved, to use this polite version of what I'm trying to say, about what's happening, broadly speaking, and have become cynical and are looking for an answer. How do you go from being cynical and compliant because you want to save your life to cynical and so cynical so that you become non-compliant to the point that your wife will die or you might threaten your own life and end up in ICU? Have you managed to get a handle on what brings people into the other side?
I think a lot of that is to do with the very committed minority of people who deliberately spread conspiracies and disinformation online and the tactics that they employ. They exploit that distrust, they exploit that cynicism in order to push conspiracy narratives, often for their own gain, whether that's for influence online, growing big following, making money, or some kind of political power gain. And as a consequence, I often find that's when you see someone tip over into conspiracy theories when otherwise they've just had understandable concerns or legitimate criticisms of government or otherwise. And it can be very difficult once someone starts going down that rabbit hole and falling victim to those tactics to undo that. I recently investigated the impact of anti-vaccine content for Panorama, which is the BBC's investigative current affairs programme. And one thing that I kept finding was that these activists would deliberately brandish medical titles or scientific expertise in order to put people off the jab. And it plays on our trust in experts, our trust in doctors, and abuses that trust. And as a consequence, a lot of people were believing it. But more than just that, I think people who are feeling especially frightened or especially cynical also like the idea that they are then surrounded by others who think the same as them. And one thing we found during the pandemic is there are these big online movements that have sprung up. And I've interviewed people who are a part of them. One woman I interviewed essentially said that she really liked being part of this community and she was probably feeling quite lonely. And there was another couple I spoke to at one of these anti-lockdown protests where a number of people were promoting not understandable concerns, but rather conspiracy theories about vaccines and that sort of thing. And it really, really struck me that I was speaking to this man and he told me that the vaccine was part of a mass genocidal plot and everyone was going to die. That's not true. And I was questioning him and I said, I don't understand why anyone would do that. Why would the Microsoft founder Bill Gates want to kill everyone? I really don't understand. And he looked me dead in the eye and just said, well, you clearly think most people are good and I think almost all people are bad. And it's very hard when someone has that very deep distrust in everything around them to combat the disinformation and conspiracy theories they are susceptible to. It's much deeper than just fact-checking. Look, this isn't right. This doesn't make any sense. It's actually about trying to understand. And I try to do that with my reporting, kind of look at this from a point of empathy and try to get what's going on and how this works. And in many ways, how these bad actors, a very small group of people, are deliberately targeting and exploiting those like this man who are easy targets for them.
It's amazing. But it just takes a small amount of poison to destroy the well.
Absolutely. And you find, like you say, the number of people I speak to who fall victim to this stuff sometimes go on to spread online conspiracies. Otherwise, they come to direct harm in their personal lives. Most of them are absolutely lovely. They're really interesting to talk to.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they're just like your average person.
Yes.
But it's very easy to fall victim to this stuff, especially when we are being bombarded with all kinds of false and unhelpful information on social media.
I'm intrigued about your, as you say, your disinformation reporter, but you just described yourself in a humorous fashion as being a conspiracy theory agony aunt. What does that mean in practice? Who needs an agony aunt regarding conspiracy theories, and what sort of advice can you dispense?
But the thing I find most frequently is that people get in touch because they're in a very difficult personal situation, whether it's a partner or a relative who's fallen into conspiracy theories, and they want to know what to do. And they've tried sending them good information, accurate information, and they're finding that it's not working and that it's having a really serious impact on their personal lives. And I interviewed a young man called Sebastian back in the autumn, whose mum has grown a really big online following by promoting conspiracies about the pandemic, suggesting that the pandemic is a hoax and that the vaccine is a weapon of mass genocide. And he spoke very powerfully about the impact this had had on his relationship with her, and how he felt he could no longer have a relationship with her, and he wanted to help other people. And he gave me some really good advice from his own experience about what to do. And one of those things was to question, not just to say, no, look, this is wrong, here's the correct information, because often the person won't trust where you're getting the correct information from. Instead, questioning, okay, say I believe everything you're saying, how would this work? Why would there be no whistleblowers or anyone who knew about this mass plot and spoke about it? How would everyone manage to control everyone in this way? And so I often give advice like that. And there are also experts and psychologists I've spoken to who have other really good nuggets of advice that people can follow. One is to keep calm, which sometimes I think can be quite hard, and to try and understand people's legitimate concerns. If they've got, you know, a political criticism or an understandable worry about the vaccine, it's much better to talk about that and to quell that fear, as opposed to them turning to online conspiracies to satisfy that worry or concern that might have developed.
Absolutely. And I think that the it's an expression I often talk about here is civil discourse. I think that shouting and roaring at people or calling them names or being ignorant is just so unhelpful to a discussion. Whereas, okay, if you think that 5G is going to kill us all, or if Bill Gates is trying to impregnate us or whatever he's trying to do, that's fine. But talk about it. Don't be shouting and roaring and being nasty about it. But that's for another day. Talk to me a bit, if you wouldn't mind, Marianne, about Sarah Everard. That story has kind of been covered in this country quite substantially, because it's the sort of thing that's universal in a manner of speaking, and yet the conspiracy theorists are active there as well.
Yes, so particularly in the hours and days after the vigil that was held in memory of Sarah Everard, there were a number of conspiracy theories that started to spread on Telegram, which is an encrypted messaging service, but then began to spill out over onto Facebook and Twitter. And a lot of them were suggesting that crisis actors were at the vigil and that this was all part of some plot to get the policing bill passed through, which didn't really make much sense because in many ways it encouraged opposition to that bill. But the most disturbing conspiracy I came across was a suggestion that Sarah Everard wasn't a real person, that this story had been made up, that it hadn't happened. And when I saw this, I thought, I just cannot understand, and I always try to understand, but I just cannot understand why someone would start this conspiracy theory. I can't understand why anyone would want to spread something that's obviously so hurtful to her family, her loved ones, and anybody that she knew. So I set about trying to find the person who had done this, and I very quickly found him. He was a man in his 40s who lived in the UK, and I asked him about why he'd started this, and he clearly was very obsessed with conspiracy theories, and it wasn't something new to him. He believed the pandemic wasn't real, but it started long before that. He was into all the other conspiracies you spoke about 9/11, about the Illuminati, about all kinds of things.
Yeah.
And he'd added up the numbers in her article and all sorts of quite strange stuff that most of us don't do when we read a news story. But what really struck me was, after a half an hour conversation, he turned around and said, look, I do understand what you're saying. I can see why that's really upsetting, and I didn't mean to upset Sarah Everard's family or friends. And I always think, and I always find, that when I'm interviewing people who believe conspiracy theories online or who start them and who are responsible in some ways for harm caused, whether it's harm to Sarah Everard's family or physical harm caused to individuals, they tend to recognize it when you have a face-to-face conversation with them. Yeah. And I think that tells us a lot about how disinhibited people can be when they're using social media and the difference it makes when they're able to see someone and think, oh, actually, I can see why maybe that was not a good thing to say.
Oh, it's a digital form of drunkenness or being high on drugs. I'm sure of it, that people are, they change their brain hardwire as soon as they hit the keyboard. And then when they meet the people in real life, they go, oh, I don't know who that was, you know, about last night. It's a different vibe altogether. Do you think the likes of Mark Zuckerberg and Jack Dorsey are essentially 21st century Frankensteins who've created monsters that they can no longer control?
I think that a lot of critics of social media would definitely agree with that. I mean, one thing I find is, as much as I spend time speaking to people impacted, I spend a lot of time reporting on and holding accountable the social media sites for their role. And what I find time and time again is that policies are introduced too late, that harm has already been caused. I've already interviewed someone who's been put off the jab, or who thinks COVID isn't real, or who believes that the world is run by satanic paedophiles, all claims that have been shared on Facebook and other social media sites over the past year. And those crackdowns that happen are just too late to prevent that harm. Another thing I do find is that it is just so big, and it is a bit out of control. I often interview people who spend their time fighting disinformation in their local Facebook groups, or trying to help people combat vaccine myths, just out of, you know, just because they want to help people. And it's not their job to clean up the social media.
No, that's for sure.
So it definitely is it poses a huge problem for society. And there are also, you know, questions to be asked of government, legislation that's been delayed, and I spent a lot of my time quizzing ministers and MPs about that as well, because at the moment there isn't an enforced duty of care from the social media sites to the people that use it. And a lot of those I interview, and particularly experts in this field, argue that that is what would help protect somebody like Brian, who I mentioned, or someone like Sebastian and his mum. And when you've spoken to people and seen the real harm that this can cause, it feels even more poignant when you're grilling an MP or speaking to a tech boss and saying, look, like, what do you say to Brian? Because this happened on your site under your watch.
Mariana, we just ran out of juice on the line there, but we got there just in time. Thank you so much for your time this morning. It's an intriguing world, and it's such a sign of the times that, you know, an organisation needs a disinformation reporter, and it's a big business as well all around the place. We may well talk again with your permission, but in the meantime, best with everything, and thanks for your time this morning. Good to talk to you.
Thank you so much.
All the best. That's Mariana Spring joining us from the BBC there. And a lot of interest in what she had to say. Are there specific countries who could be seen as the biggest purveyors of conspiracy theories? I don't think everyone's at it now. Russia and China come to mind since this text. Massive industry, 24/7, massive threat to the world. Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to know when you're reading or seeing anything, really. But you have to be so careful. Interesting listening to your interview this morning with the woman from the BBC. The thing that I feel is really happening here is around certainty. The conspiracy theories offer certainty in a world where there isn't much. The doctors and politicians are doing their best in general, but they can't give us absolutes about when this will get better. But the conspiracy communities are not constrained in the same way. They offer certainty, which is beguiling and tempting. Yeah, but that's all very well. But the certainty is built on a complete horse manure, then that's not much certain use in that certainty at all. In fact, it's the further thing from certainty. I say, as an aside, going back to your text, Clara says, as a psychotherapist, one of the things which is more and more prevalent at the moment is anxiety around this uncertainty. What we need is understanding and empathy for one another. I agree with that. I'll get off my soapbox now, says Clara. Thanks for bringing up some sanity and kindness to the airwaves. Well, that's why I thought the Taoiseach's address earlier on in the week, there was a sense of certainty, I thought, about dates and times and vaccinations. But you're quite right. We were lacking that for a couple of months, and that doesn't help matters at all. Another says, I am bombarded with conspiracy theories and disinformation from a family member all the time. It's awful stuff to be sent, and it can separate families. It sure can. And, you know, sometimes I think you nearly have to stage an intervention, don't you? And say, hey, listen, about that stuff, you know, we need to have a quick conversation. Anyway, that was Mariana Spring. I enjoyed talking to her. Intriguing. It's 12 minutes to 10.